You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Thanks again to Ben, Paddy and Thomas for their contribution. I'll get to your contributions shortly. Just to give you an update on some news that's developing, Gardaí are investigating criminal damage by fire to a van and a car. They were parked at a house in Lochinlure in Dunanall at approximately 5:10 a.m. this morning. A man aged in his 30s has been arrested in connection with the investigation, has been detained at a station in the Garda Northwestern region under Section 4 of the Criminal Justice Act 1984. So in the Lochinlure area, car and van damaged by fire in the early hours of this morning. A man in his 30s has been arrested and is currently in Garda custody. Hello, Greg. I think there should be an emergency cancellation of this election, the same as new law legislation was rushed in into construction for COVID payments. It'll be a total waste of money. If we need another election, or even if we as Irish people could use the gift God gave us to make the difference in humans and animals, the brain that can make a choice, nobody should vote Jim Gavin now, as he has withdrawn its common sense decision, from Rosaline. But you see, when you sort of start tinkering around with the, like, let's say there were six candidates and a popular candidate was taken out, for an example, could we then say, quick, let's scrap it so we can get another popular candidate in? It just so happened there were three people contesting it, such is the system, or how the system threw it out, and it's down to two. But as I say, if you start tinkering with that, then where does it end? I mean, there could have been 12 candidates and two pulled out. Do you go, right, we can't run it now? So it's a complicated one, Rosaline. I'm not dismissing your point for a second, don't get me wrong. Just you wonder where it would go from there. Jim Gavin's votes could be crucial if he has a number of second votes on his ballot. Yeah, indeed. But I mean, what would motivate someone to vote for Jim Gavin now at this point? Maybe it might be that people felt he was treated unfairly, either by the media or by Fianna Fáil, and go, you know what, Jim's a decent fellow, I'm going to vote for him. Let's not forget that obviously he would have been drawing a great deal of votes from the Dublin area and surrounds, given his sport and past. So maybe they might say, you know what he did wasn't a big deal, he shouldn't have been treated like that, I'm voting him for him anyway. There are those that might say, well, I'm going to vote for him, I don't support him, but if he wins and he resigns, we get another election and I can get such and such on the ballot paper. So there's actually quite a few reasons as to why people might vote for him. As it turns out, they probably won't, if the truth be told, because it's one thing saying you're going to do something, and there's another thing actually doing it. The same with spoiled votes. You know, you might say, put it on Facebook, I'm going to spoil my vote, but if it's a wet morning and you're going, right, am I really going to head down to the national school just to write another name or a scribble on my ballot paper? Someone else is going to do it, so we'll see. A caller says, sounds like Thomas Pringle has been having sleepless nights trying to comprehend how Donald Trump secured a deal. Did he not hear the Palestinian ambassador to Ireland praise Trump last night? Another, the reason more wind farms are being built is because it's a gold mine for investors. Another, necessity for life should not be subject to competitive markets. We knew this until Reagan and Thatcher brainwashed everyone with neoliberalism. Return to Keynesian economics, spend money to make money, invest in the public, and it returns dividends in the future. The only reason neoliberalism has worked is because it leached from the foundations of what we already built. Exactly, Greg, you have hit the nail on the head there. It's all about helping the rich and ignoring the working class. Privatisation has caused the cost of energy, housing, health, etc. to be based on profit only. Another, can someone explain why 5 million is being spent on a walkway from Castlefin to Lifford, which only about 10 people will ever use? This country seems to have no idea about spending for real value and for purpose. Staying with the budget, tell your Fianna Fáil guests that they did not reduce college fees. They put them up €1,000 to reduce them by 500. As far as student accommodation is concerned, does he not know who's occupying it now? A budget for the wealthy, says a listener. But I mean, I suppose they introduced a temporary measure, got rid of the temporary measure and put in a permanent measure. So you can frame that one of two ways, I suppose. Another, this government did nothing for the common worker. Instead, they opted to support their wealthy contract friends in the building trade. Look at what the building boom did to Donegal. We now have houses falling down around us as suppliers and contractors took shortcuts for a fast turnover because of pressure to supply. Not least either, by the way, we had very little regulation or very little enforcement of that regulation as well. Good morning, Greg. What do you guys think about the 100 million for Irish racing and greyhound racing, while little or nothing for many others more in need? Only €10 for people on social welfare. That comes in from John. John, I didn't get to that because that hour goes so quick. And I wanted to start with the breaking news from overnight. But listen, I'm interested in your opinion. I mean, you know this, don't you? That everybody's opinion out there is as important as our Friday panel. And really, this whole show, 5 days a week, is the people's panel, so to speak. So always get your views in. And feel free to come on, as many of you do, and articulate it on the radio. We'd love a chat with you as well. Northern Ireland's Justice Minister Naomi Long had a mob turn up at her home on Wednesday. This type of protest is becoming ever common. While it's not acceptable, how else are disgruntled communities going to get their voices heard at the ballot box and stop necessarily voting down the same two or three lines? Find a candidate that's going to make changes, you know, deselect them like that. That's democracy. Democracy isn't massed gangs at people's doors, is it? As a person on disability for the rest of my life, budget did nothing for me. I live at home. I don't get fuel allowance or anything else. The lump sum payment helped me in the past to make ends meet. I don't know what I'll do this year. I'm crippled with arthritis, unable to work. Carers got big payments, nothing for disability or disabled people that can help get them cowboys out, they say. Why doesn't Tombras Pringle highlight the murders and atrocities taking place in Nigeria, where since 2010, 100,000 Christians have been killed, 12 million displaced by Islamic terrorist group Boko Haram? Why is no one talking about this? I personally am getting a little vexed at the coverage of pro-Palestinian protests who make no comment on the plight of persecuted Christians in Nigeria and elsewhere in the world. Seems that, Jim, I've found this frustrating myself. There's a terrible situation happening in Sudan at the moment. Those kids are important to me as the Palestinian kids. And I just wonder, will there be a flotilla to, and I mean, obviously, you know, I know it's not literally a flotilla, but will a group of, you know, international do-gooders, and I don't mean that disparaging, you know, start walking the way into Sudan? Do you know what I mean? And highlighting the plight there, or Nigeria, or elsewhere in the world. Staying with Gaza, good morning, Greg. There'll be no ceasefire. The Israelis will continue to terrorise the Palestinian people like they have for the last 100 years. Thanks, Danny. And Danny, you referenced another thing in there. Don't worry about that at all. It's perfect, okay? So keep your messages and comments coming in. If Trump really wanted to actually solve this, he would remove all US funding from Israel and ban AIPAC from the US. But Hamas aren't innocent in all of this either. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm defending anyone, but this is not how it works. The reason nuclear weapons work is not because they would use them. It's mutual destruction. Okay, so there's no point Russia sending nuclear weapons to the US, because by the time they land, Russia will also have nuclear weapons on the way to it that will destroy it. So If Israel were weak in the Middle East, let me put it like that, and I'm only just trying to say why they're supported. If the Middle East were weak, you know, it is only a matter of time before Egypt, Iran, or other countries might look on and go, you know what, there's a bit of territory we can take, and vice versa. You know, Iran wants to be strong. It wants to have nuclear weapons, not because it wants to necessarily terrorize the rest of the Middle East, but it knows that that means it won't be attacked. So, you know, not giving Israel weapons is not in the interest of the United States and its economy, etc. But facilitating what it's been doing, you know, how can people sleep at night? And I doubt there's a place upstairs for them. Germany only learned its lesson from World War II because it was put in its place for what it did. That's not going to happen to Israel, unfortunately. Interesting comment there. Finally, before we take the bingo numbers, hi Greg, it's great to see the dog warden out in our area this last few days, checking that dogs are licensed and under control. It makes such a difference. Wow, okay. Tell us more about that. That's something we've been banging on about for ages in terms of, you know, I know dog wardens are stretched and I know their job can be somewhat 9 to 5, and that's not their effort. It's just in terms of when they're contracted. But if they're out and about checking that dogs are on the leash, etc., I think that's really positive. Let us know where. Welcome back to the programme. And I'm joined in studio by surgeon and Model 3 Hospital Project Manager or lead out, Letterkenny University Hospital lead clinician, Mr. Michael Sugru. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for asking me to come on.
No, it's fair. It's great to have you with us. And I want to start with one of the big nights in the calendar, and that's the Northwest Breast Cancer Ball. It's in aid of breast cancer research, and it's Friday the 5th of December in the wonderful setting of the Silver Tassie Hotel. Tickets available now.
That's right, Greg. I think it's about our 15th year of the Breast Ball. It's usually a sellout, so it's a great night out. It's a community night out rather than a medical night out, and it's a celebration of people's well-being, and it's lovely to we have some patients come, some relatives, and but it's community, and it's a fantastic night out, a bit of glamour in early December.
That's it, and also too, what a fancy way to celebrate your Christmas if you wanted to take a table as a business or something.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You can get a table of 10. It's they're €60 a head, and it all goes back into the breast fund. So it's a good night out.
It's relatively reasonable, €60. I've seen some other events that are they're upcoming that's quite a bit ahead of that. So obviously you've put some thought into the price point.
Yeah, well, we like people to come. They can donate on the night. There are multiple auctions and raffles. It's a fantastic committee. So there are opportunities on the night if they feel people want to donate a bit more. They can, of course. But we like to make it accessible for the people, rather than making it expensive.
Yeah, it's a great night out. It's on Friday the 5th of December at in the Silver Tassie Hotel. There's a drinks reception from 7:15, which is always lovely, that moment, you know, where everyone's just milling around and you can hear the chink of glasses and the murmur of conversation and the laughter. Dinner's at 8 and the dress code is black tie formal, so this is your opportunity to dress up. And there's great music on the night too, the Beefsteak Dancers. If you want to get your tickets and get in nice and early as well, if you want to go as a couple, or I presume this table, you accommodate people around the one table, right?
Yes.
9125619, 074 9125619. And what might suit a lot of you as well, because you're listening to us right across the region, is there is preferential accommodation rates available on request at the Silver Tassie Hotel. So if you want to make a night of it and you just go up the stairs rather than trying to figure out how you're going to get home or undertake a drive, that's a great option for you as well. So great band, the Beefsteak Dancers. And of course, Noel Cunningham is your host.
Yes, and always great words of wisdom from Noel and laughter. So it's a great night. I mean, we use the funding to inject money into our research programme, our patient well-being. And we're very pleased. We just had a publication published last week in The Surgeon about our lymphedema rates and our management of lymphedema in Breast Centre Northwest. And this was a prospective study over 3 years. That means we followed the patients for 3 years, Greg, which is going forward rather than trying to look back. Very exciting and great teamwork by Angus Lloyd, one of the senior registrars, Alison Johnson, who is our research assistant and employed by community funds for 7 years. She was actually employed as a research assistant by people in the community.
That's amazing.
And the work that has been done by the unit, by Alison, the medical students, the registrars, the breast nurses, Nicola and Geraldine, and now Brenda, is just fantastic. So this paper is a good example of how we've analysed our performance here in Letterkenny, and we're very pleased with our lymphedema swelling of the arm. And people have this great fear, Greg, about having breast cancer surgery, they're going to get lymphedema. And our results are better than international averages. So we're very pleased.
And how
about
is that achieved, Michael, or is it too technical for us to get into?
It's probably a little bit technical, but it relates to the type of surgery that we do. Mm-hmm. So we work with oncology, Karen, Chris and Vuzek, the three consultant oncologists. We work with our radiotherapy team in at Ngalvin. And between us, we try and optimise it. But it's really about surgery. And you have to be careful with your surgical technique. So Mr. Varsigalis and myself contributed to this, and we're very pleased with that. The other research work that we've done, funded by things like the Breast Ball and Christmas Lights and Kilmacrennan and golf outings in wherever, are things like how to reduce re-excision rates for ladies undergoing breast cancer surgery. So with surgery now, Greg, you want to remove the entire tumour, preferentially on the first go. Now, that's not always possible. Mm-hmm. And our results on that are very, very pleased. So the team effort there in getting one of the lowest re-excision rates in the country is a direct result of research.
And that, of course, benefits the patient, but the patient's not necessarily going to be always available, always aware of these advances either, are they, really? I mean, they will just, you know, hopefully not have to have a re-incision, or less likely potentially to get the swelling that you talk of. But yes, it's because you can't say, in other words, what I'm trying to get across here is that we are feeling the benefits, but you guys know where those benefits are coming from.
That's right. When you're diagnosed with breast cancer, it's a very difficult time in your life. It affects your family. It's a journey that starts and goes in and comes out. It takes a year, Greg. The fine print research is very hard to translate into clinical care. And people don't understand that, but it's really, really important. So it's the attention to fine detail, the planning of your operation, the use of specimen x-rays while you're asleep in the operating theatre, and we have wonderful systems in Letterkenny for this, all add up to make your outcome better. So it's quite an emotive time, and there is a limit to what you can tell patients. You know, it's not that we want to hold something back.
Not some other people in information either.
Yeah, so it depends on the patient, you know. And you have to tailor what you're going to tell the patient to the patient's particular wishes. But it is a very supported environment. And this year has been one of our busiest years ever with breast cancer diagnosis. We're 25% more breast cancers this year than last year.
Why is that? I think the population changes? Is it?
I think cancer is on the increase generally. I think there is a big challenge with what we're eating in terms of our weight. It is becoming a challenge. And it's recognized now that if you're overweight, you've got an increased risk of breast cancer. I think people are more conscious of it. And we're getting a lot of older patients coming in now that might have held on to their cancer. So that's really good.
Okay.
And your listeners need to know that there is a supportive mechanism there. It was interesting. I was at a book launch last night by Priscilla Key, Writing for My Life, and her funds from this book will go towards the breast ball. And one of her poems, Greg, really struck me. And can I read a little excerpt?
Of course you can, yeah.
And this is a poem about a family member of hers who was diagnosed with breast cancer, and Priscilla was in the actual consultation room, and I'll just read a segment of the poem. And it's a wonderful book. It's available from Bookmark today, and some proceeds go to the Breast Fund. So she talks about that consultation room interaction. In this case, it's a family member with her husband. Preparing for the battle and never placing blame. You'll face it like a warrior. Give all you have upon the sword. It won't remember how you felt, but only how you roared. And on into the darkness, you'll struggle for the light. There you'll find us waiting, guide you on through the night. If ever you should doubt your strength, when your soul is tired, just look behind. We'll carry you, walk you through the fire. He held your hand. I took a breath. I looked at you with pride. You'll take this cross to carry, and we'll travel at your side. So, you know, that epitomizes everything about being diagnosed with breast cancer. There is that support from your husband or your partner or your wife, if it's a man, your family, and the unit. And the support that has been developed by like Geraldine McGregor and Nicola and the breast nurses and the team in there is just tremendous. So it is a sad time to be diagnosed, but looking at it positively, the outcomes are so much better with breast cancer, and our oncology team can provide everything in Letterkenny that's provided anywhere in the world. So this is really good for the people of the Northwest.
I just want to just reverse a little bit and just to highlight the fact of something very important you said, especially given your knowledge all of this, is that our lifestyle or how we look after ourselves can be one of the greatest preventers. In other words, what you're eating, your weight and what have you. You know, a lot of stuff is out of our control, okay, but there is some stuff that's within it. Now, it doesn't mean you're immune or anything, of course, but when you're looking at reasons for increases, and I get the reference to the older patient as well, but it's just hope it lands with people that potentially, you know, some lifestyle changes, a bit of exercise or what have you, could be very beneficial to you in best reducing the chances of you getting cancer.
Yeah, there are three key things in breast cancer, really. One is your family history. And we have a tailored program in Letterkenny, in the Breast Centre Northwest, a personalised tailored program to identify people of higher risk. So if your mom or your sister have breast cancer, your risk is doubled. And if your mom and your sister both have breast cancer, your risk is tripled. So they're a special group, Greg, that need that extra monitoring. So that's your family. You can't do anything about your family. The next thing then is your estrogen exposure. And that relates to when you first got your periods or when you're going to the menopause, but it also relates to your body fat. And it's recognized now that potentially your estrogen levels will rise the more BMI you have. There is the metabolic syndrome in people who are overweight with a high BMI. So the more weight you put on, the risk of cancer increases.
Mm.
The third thing then is your social side of things, and that's alcohol and exercise. So I think that watching what you eat, the issue of processed foods is becoming an issue globally,
mm-hmm.
and putting on that weight. So I think when you're about to eat your lunch today, your listeners, you've got to look and say, how much sugar is in this?
Mm.
You know, there are so many different substitutes that you can place on that. And I always pick up great words of wisdom from my Pauline at home, and I'm always monitoring these things now. And if you actually, if you look at the sugars are the key. And it is, if you look at those old family photographs, Greg, when we were in our 20s, how thin we were and how we've changed.
Yeah.
You know, our plates have got bigger, our serves have got bigger, and the content of sugar has got much bigger.
Yeah, okay. It is very good advice. We do fantastic, when I say we, I can't take any credit. You do and your team do fantastic work in terms of research, and not just actually the research that you do, but the funding of it, and to get it published in recognised journals like The Surgeon, for an example. How do we compare, not wishing to in any way put any of your colleagues down, but is this happening across the country, or are we outliers in terms of our focus on sort of research and development?
There's some fantastic research going on in Ireland, in all areas. But in breast cancer specifically, there are major units in the in the principal university hospitals, the like of Galway University Hospital and Beaumont, who would have a specific focus on detailed breast cancer work. And this would be at a molecular level, in the biochemistry, in the cells. Now, we can't do that in Letterkenny because we're a Model 3 hospital, and it's very difficult to do that. But it is appropriate that they're doing it in the university hospital. So there is a lot of research going on in Ireland. In terms of us here, we focused on family history. We focused on wound infections and wound bundles. I mean, it was wonderful. At the Cleveland Clinic about 3 years ago, I was a guest speaker, and they took on our wound bundle that we use here, because our wound infection rates are very low in Letterkenny in breast surgery. And that's something that we've published on in the past. So this is small research, but it translates to better outcomes.
Yeah, impactful, okay.
Yeah.
In terms of the throughput of patients, is that remaining a challenge in terms of, I suppose, you able to perform the work and your colleagues able to perform the work in a timely fashion? You know, there's lots of figures that are out there and contested and framed in different ways. But I mean, you are literally at the coalface. We really hope promised investment and development does come to pass. But how great a challenge is it for you to, if I could put it as crudely, get people that need to be on the operating table on the operating table?
Well, breast cancer is fairly unique. It's in that it's quarantined.
Okay.
So the ladies who are speaking, generally it's the ladies, of course, but the patients who are requiring surgery are never cancelled. Okay. So, and that's great. So cancer surgery has that unique quarantine in all hospitals. So their treatment as such for surgery is never delayed. You know, there may be an occasional case that's cancelled, but it's extremely rare. So the numbers that come through, we've had 2,700 patients come through the breast unit so far this year. That's just over 2,500. So by the end of the year, 3,500 patients will have availed of Breast Centre Northwest. That's a fairly large volume, and we'll have about 110 patients with cancers. So providing that service, we run extra clinics sometimes at the weekend. We had one last weekend, and we'll have one in 2 weekends' time. I'm doing extra clinics at the moment myself to facilitate the departure of my colleague, Mr. Varsigalis. But in terms of the future, we've just appointed a second breast radiologist who'll be coming in January. So that's really good. Dr. Schreier does a marvellous job, and he'll be accompanied by another. We've advertised and interviewed for a second breast surgeon. And that surgeon, hopefully, that was last week, Greg. So these things secure the future of the hospital.
Accept the offer, whoever you are, please.
So it's really good.
Yeah. Can I just ask one other question then too? Sorry, I meant to ask this a little earlier on. Sort of if you take the last 15 years, so say, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago to today, how has cancer treatment developed over that 15 years? I'm just thinking of someone who went for a, you know, because I heard recently of tests being, blood tests being sent away so that, you know, the treatment could be very specifically tailored. I don't know when that began, but, you know, has there been very noticeable improvements in care and, I suppose, then outcomes over that time frame, or is that too crude a question?
There have been remarkable improvements. Mm. There have been remarkable improvements, particularly in oncology, and less so in surgery. I'm a surgeon, but oncology have really made great advances. And that's targeted therapy. What do we mean by that? When I'm talking to my patients, the common type of cancer is, say, a black-haired variety. Then you have the red-headed variety, and then you have the blonde variety. You know, there's different types, like the COVID virus. Mm. There are different particles on the cancer. Mm. So there is a subgroup who had a very poor prognosis up to 10, 15 years ago. Mm. They were HER2-positive patients. That's a little protein particle, for simplicity's sake, on the outside of the cell. Well, with a drug called Herceptin and the delivered by the oncologist, they have had a transformation in survival.
Wow.
And it's remarkable. So you can operate on a patient now who's had a complete pathological response, no cancer left when you operate. So oncology have made great strides forward, okay? And that's due to research. The second area in surgery, we have de-escalated surgery significantly. What do I mean by that? We tend to do less armpit surgery in the axilla, removing less lymph nodes. Mm. And that is obviously going to be better for the patient. Mm-hmm. So we have new techniques in surgery. So our wounds are better, mm-hmm. all these things. So mm-hmm. that adds up. we've improved our understanding of patient outcome, the importance of getting patients involved. So there's the empathy and all that. We're much more aware of that than we were 20 years ago. Mm. So less surgery, better oncology. And radiotherapy is now shortened. It used to be more 6 weeks. Now it's a 3-week course generally. And sometimes it can be a 5-day course. Mm-hmm. They target the radiotherapy with computer AI. And, you know, speaking of which, moving forward, for example, we currently want to buy an automated ultrasound machine, which is quite exciting, Greg. And this will allow a lady's breast to be automated ultrasound performed with AI analysis. And the money from last year's breast ball and many of the others is going to go to that. It's 185,000. And we have the money for that. And we're just waiting to go through the correct procurement process to ensure. I think we're going to be one of the first in the country to have
very
this here.
Very exciting. And this is all leading us back to exactly how this type of stuff can be done. It's through, as Michael mentioned, golfing events, other events, but also one of the flagship fundraisers is the Letterkenny University Hospital Northwest Breast Cancer Ball. And I wanted to take the time to go through the importance of this type of fundraising. And you've heard from Michael literally how it has impacted and how it will impact it, not just notionally, but literally and physically. So, and the good thing is this is a great night out, right? So, yes. You know, all you're being asked to do is have a great night out.
Yes.
And the byproduct of that is that you help in this work. It's Friday the 5th of December 2025, the Silver Tassie Hotel Letterkenny. Drink receptions from 7:15, dinner at 8. The dress code is black tie formal. The beef steak dancers are providing the music, and Noel Cunningham is your host. And if you fancy to make an overnight out of it, and who's to say there might be a bit of space for a little romance, well, preferential accommodation rates are available on request at the Silver Tassie Hotel, and there's a guest of honour as well.
Yes, Shay Given is our celebrity guest, and that's fantastic. I mean, Donegal man, we all love. So it is wonderful that he, in his busy schedule, will be joining us. So we've had some fantastic celebrity guests.
And speaking of events and developments, yeah. He's really come on in terms of becoming a pundit and all that type of stuff. He's become one of the key figures in it, which is brilliant to see. All right, so your tickets are available, by the way, from the Silver Tassie, 9125619, or just Google it, but it's the Silver Tassie, 9125619. If you look at events like this, the ticket is €60 for your meal, your entertainment, and it's actually very, very, it's very competitive, but the money goes towards the amazing work and acquisitions that you've heard Mr. Michael Sugrue talk of. Have we touched on anything, or is there anything else that is worth?
I think there's a lot of positivity in the hospital, Greg, about the new developments that are going to happen, mm-hmm. like the surgical hub, the oncology.
I was pleased to hear I wasn't expecting to hear any advance at all on that for, you know yourself, the way it is. But at one of the more recent health meetings, you know, things are moving forward. This is not a dust gatherer.
No, this is a game changer for the hospital and the region, because our hospital needs that input from a funding point of view, from a manpower point of view, structure and training. And this is great. So this is good news moving forward. And we hope that it will happen quickly.
Mm-hmm. Before you're replaced by a robot.
Yes. Yes. or put in a box, a large 6-foot
by
box.
By a robot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, God forbid any of that happens, but you just never blooming low. All right, Mr. Michael Sugrue, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, we'll remind the listeners about this big night on the 5th of December in the Silver Tassie Hotel. I was at a 100th birthday party, would you believe it, at the Silver Tassie Hotel recently and hadn't eaten there in a while, and it was lovely. It's a beautiful set and great staff.
Yeah, they do a fantastic job. They're amazing.
And it's actually a nice walk-up. It's got that kind of a... All right, then. Right, Michael, thank you
so much.
We'll be back with more after the break. I'm joined by Caroline McDay, chairperson of the Older Persons Council. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
Very well.
Excited
indeed.
To be here?
Very excited.
Yeah.
I just, before I even start, I'd like to wish everybody a happy Mental Health Day.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Indeed. Critical.
Yeah.
Mairead Cranley, slightly less excited, but still the regional manager for Age Friendly Ireland. How are you getting on, Mairead?
Good morning, Greg. I'm good. How are you?
It's great to have you with us. I want to start with you, Caroline. The Donegal Older Persons Council. Very, very important. But, you know, we talked a little off air, and I'm sure you might reference it now. We are moving to a point where we're going to have more and more older people. And it'll be interesting to see if we have councils named as they are, because, you know, more of the population will be sort of represented in these categories. But anyway, talk to us about the council.
Okay. The council is a citizen-led forum that represents the voice of the older person in the community, with the government and on the municipal district areas all throughout Ireland. The council, at the moment we have 200 members throughout Donegal, that's on the council level, and then we have an executive team that bring the actions of the council members to the county council through the alliance. And the alliance meets, I think, quarterly, Maria, is it?
Yeah, the alliance meetings, yeah, they're held quarterly, four times in the year, yes.
And we bring any issues that our members give to us to that seat of power, and we are the voice of older people on the council.
And are a lot of those representations, are they very regional or local, or do they talk of things like, you know, maybe... travel, access to services, that sort of are more broader problems that are reflected across the country, Caroline?
Well, personally, I'm really focused on Donegal. Mm. But, you know, each executive committee throughout the country will be focused on their county and then bring all that stuff to a national level, you know, through the Age Friendly programme, which Mairead can talk about, you know, later on. For example, last year in our AGM, we did research about what people were happy about and what they needed to change in their lives so that they could live more comfortably as they age. And the results we got from our questionnaire, we then made a report and brought that to the Alliance. And now the Council have that report from our actual members that states really clearly what older people in Donegal need in terms of their housing, retrofitting, community connection, you know, mental health, transport, you know, better access to transport. So our AGM is really important for getting research done. Yeah.
And it's
by our
complex,
members.
Of course, but really, actually, what we're talking about is the sort of basic, what you would hope, social structures to live happily, not lonely.
Yes.
Engaging and comfortably, right? They're not looking for anything beyond that. Mairead, how important is it, you know, in getting this type of feedback directly from people? Because sometimes in this country we have a habit of talking about people and not to them. But this info comes from those representing the older person.
Greg, it's just vital at the moment because, as you know, we've mentioned we've an ageing population coming our way, and the Older People's Councils have been, you know, developed just to help the multi-agencies across the public sector to better their services and the way they deliver them, and deliver them to the needs of the older person themselves, because, you know, our needs, as you, well, not that far off the Older Persons Council myself, but our needs are very different.
I've already just said that to Caroline.
Than the older person.
Not themselves. About you, sorry, but sorry, not about you, Mairead. I have to clarify that about myself. Sorry.
Well, the age bracket we look at, Greg, is from 55 and over. They're the age group that we would consult with. But in saying that, when we say age friendly, we're talking from the cradle to the grave. From the day we're born, we're aging. So if we're doing walkability audits, we'll consult with the buggy users as well, the parent and toddlers, the wheelchair users and whatnot. So we would, when we're doing consultations or engaging with older people, we try to reach the full diverse group, the vulnerable older person to maybe the person that is quite active and living in towns. So again, we would have our challenges trying to get to the person that's out in the rural areas. Last year, fair play to Donegal, they took their AGM out to the Gaeltacht area out in Gidore, where this year now they're gone more central to Letterkenny, you know. But in saying that, there is transport, you know, available maybe through local link and whatnot to bus people in and out from the more rural parts of Donegal.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is we are such a vast county that people are always going to have to travel to any event, no matter where you put it. Caroline, I mean, obviously, say, for instance, post-budget, you know, people have things to say, and maybe concerns might be exacerbated. How do I put... I mean, if someone now, a pensioner, someone on a pension, were to only spend their money on food, the 10% increase would only be 70% of what they'd actually need to stay where they are, right? So that's the relationship between increases and inflation and all that type of stuff. But, you know... How powerful a lobby group do you think the councils are across the country in influencing government policy?
Well, we're not a lobby group as such, you know, and the way you would understand that. We're more of a voice, you know. But I think that voice, our voice will become louder with the more members we have, and the more members we have, the stronger our voice. And, you know, what I would really like to say today is, if you are over the 55 bracket and you do feel strongly about ageing in place and, you know, having a better quality of life as we age, please contact us and get involved. It is voluntary, but it's, you know, if you are the type of person who has the energy to attend events and to get involved in research, get involved in the walkability, because, you know, there's a saying, my son is an engineer, and, you know, he says all the time, if you design for old age, you include everybody.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I was thinking, you know, that as Mairead was speaking. Mairead, did you want to come in there?
Yeah, Greg, just in relation to the Older People's Council, what Caroline said, they're not a lobbying group. What their role is to co-design with the older, with the agencies. You know, they will come up with the issues and the concerns, but their role is not to, you know, go and
that's right.
And it's to come up with the solution
of course,
to the problem.
And it was only I that used the word lobby, really, but
yeah.
I was using the context that if you get a report right that is reflective of what older people think, and you submit that report to a body that's responsible for making decisions, it's that really what I was talking of, not necessarily banging the door coming up to an election. That being said, and not to politicise this, Mairead, either, but, you know, older people are more likely to engage with the media, older people are more likely to vote. You know, and it all comes down to that. So it is a powerful, I was going to say the word lobby again, it is a powerful group. Mairead,
it is
older people,
a very powerful group.
In achieving what they wish for themselves, I think. And also too, Mairead, do we have to be conscious of the fact that sometimes we think this is other people, right? The 55-year-old today is 17, 15 years. Would you not want to have some influence on the world that you're living in 15 years? If you're, you know, 68 today, you are, well, why did I go 68? You're the 83-year-old in 15 years, right? So you want to sort of figure out, you know, you'll be very interested then potentially in public housing and public travel and housing, Caroline.
Yes, we're interested in every aspect of life.
Yeah.
Social, financial, you know, we want, like, I myself, I didn't realise I was getting older until I went to one of these meetings. I literally went by accident with my sister and I suddenly realised, oh my God, I'm in this bracket.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of awkwardness around it in the beginning because, you know, it was just like I had never thought of myself in that older cohort. But I've come to terms with it now and I'm very into what we're doing in terms of improving the quality of life for everyone, inclusively,
and I think as you get older. I think a lot of that work as well, actually, is breaking down the stigma of... Yeah. Sort of realising that you might be in a... What's wrong with being a little bit older? We have to just make sure we have the best life. We look after our health as best as possible. And, Mairead, you know, hopefully we are living longer and it's important now that sort of everyone is preparing to be able to enjoy as best as possible those advanced years, those older years that we'll hopefully have.
Well, we are living longer. That is proven. We are living longer. But the only thing is we want to remain living independently, you know, as long as we can in our own homes, in our own communities. And that's what the Age Friendly Programme is helping, you know, each city and county to do across the country. And that's by bettering the services that's available for older people. But not only that, see the likes now of the AGM tomorrow. You know, there's so many changes in services and new services and whatnot, and it's keeping up to speed what services are available, because there is fantastic services available for older people, but they don't know they're out there.
No, that's so frustrating.
It is so frustrating.
But actually, I'm less frustrated because we have a platform that we can try and connect those people. But we have people in areas that feel lonely, feel isolated, feel there's nothing for them, and there's a big event happening every second morning just up the road or something, and it's connecting them. Again, too, not to be miserable about this, but, you know, if you're 30 or 40 listening to this programme now, like, your experience as an older person is being fashioned now, right? So people are unable to necessarily get their own homes now. Well, that presents often, not that every older person now has their own home, but it can be a collateral or it can be a place to live. You know, we could have in 30 years' time, 30 and 40-year-olds with no house, you know, no house that they can sort of liquidate to help with their life or downsize or what have you. So, you know, there's challenges all the while, and we do have a heads up of what's coming. So it's really critical that we plan for that. Mairead, did you want to come back in there?
You know, it is important, Greg, you bring in the younger generation, because it is harder for them to get on the property ladder. And there's many an older person living maybe in a 5-bedroom house, hard to maintain, you know. So it's the coming up with the ideas and coming up with the plans, you know, to see how to work it better, you know, in the future, for the future. But